This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tan Talk Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Okay, at the bottom of the hour, I have a very nice guest. He's been on before, and one of the reasons I wanted him back is I've always encouraged all of you to write, and it is so much fun to write, and it is so great when you see your words on paper. And there are many different kinds of books that you can write. You don't have to write a novel. You don't have to write a biography. You can write a book just about something that interests you. And that's why I'm so happy that Larry Jorgensen is going to be joining me at the bottom of the hour. And we're going to be talking about this book. It's called Return to the Coca-Cola Trail, More People and Places in the History of Coca-Cola. Now, I love his books because, well, first of all, Coca-Cola is a symbol of America. Wherever you go, and I have traveled and lived in so many places, and wherever you go, even to the most remote locations, I remember one time being stuck, literally stuck, in the middle of Turkey, in the middle of nowhere. My husband and I were driving from, we'd driven from Bremen, Germany, all the way, we were driving to Iran. And the transmission went out in the middle of Turkey. And it was a very interesting experience. We found a tiny little garage where they were selling petrol by the liter. And they had a kind of a hole in the ground that was the ramp that you drove over, and they could go under and look under the car. And it was very funny. I mean, at the time, I'm not sure that my husband thought it was that funny, but of course, the type of guy he was, he could fix anything anywhere, and so he fixed that car it was a Cadillac, a white Cadillac, and he fixed that car in this little remote garage. But the fun thing is I got to spend the entire day sitting around with the family that owned the garage, and mostly playing with the children all day long. But what did they have on the wall of their garage? You could hardly call it a garage. It was like a hut. It was a hut. They had a Coca-Cola sign, because even there, wherever you go, you can find Coca-Cola. And it was just a fun reminder for me of those wonderful days. And as I said, I've lived and traveled all over the place, and I don't know anywhere that, as a matter of fact, it was probably the drink that I ordered the most. I would, unless, you know, I ordered tea when I could see that it was boiled, but I generally felt pretty safe about ordering a Coke. And so wherever I traveled, I ordered a Coca-Cola. And so it's going to be fun to talk to Larry Jorgensen about this, because he's turned this into an adventure, writing about something that just intrigued him. And it's turned out very well. And what I like about it is, for all of you writers out there, it is a book that you, and his, now this is his second book, that you will want to get and just have sort of at your fingertips. And if you're writing a story set in America, so far he's just done America, but who knows, he'll do some other countries one day. It's there for you to just add some depth to your writing. So that's why I enjoy the writing. I enjoy the talking to him. So that's going to be at the bottom of the hour. But I had another guest planned for today. Fortunately or unfortunately, it depends on how you look at it. She is a second one of my guests who is having a baby just when she's supposed to be on the program. So she's gone into sort of a labor. She's in the hospital. And so I we decided to put her off. She didn't need the tension. She got a little high blood pressure there because the baby's not due for another couple of weeks. But she's going to rest up and take it easy. So anyway, I will have her as soon as she has the baby, and then she will be more relaxed, and we can talk about her romance. You know, if you're a romance author, it's nice that you have nice results out of it. So I'm looking forward to talking to her in the near future. But meanwhile, I want to talk. I have several other things that I want to share with you. And I thought it would be appropriate with all the things that are happening in the news. And I must admit that I'm not as actively pursuing reading the news as I used to, because sometimes it is overwhelming. But thinking about the news, thinking about what's happening in this world, you know, it's just up to us really to look at how we can change things, how things can get better. And one of the things I wanted to play today is another of Davon Miller's book buzzes that he is doing for kids' books. And this is a particularly moving book. And I thought that, you know, Davon Miller himself is just a fantastic author and illustrator. He's a young man who's very thoughtful. And he selected a book that I think is just, it is really quite beautiful. It is written by Amanda Lynch. It is called Black Boy Fly. And the illustrations are by Bonnie Lemaire, an absolutely exquisite author. You know, she's one of those illustrators who, just in her hands, stories come alive. And, of course, she's had a wonderful, you know, when you work with a writer who has really great words to go with your story, it's really wonderful. So we're going to play the book buzz for Davon Miller and his April selection, and a perfect one.
Hey everyone, it's Davon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Talk Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. Already ranking in as the number one new release on Amazon for children's African history fiction within its first month of release is the book Black Boy Fly, written by bestselling author Amanda Lynch. In Amanda's sixth published book, readers get to fly across the pages with Amanda's character, MJ. This book encourages young boys to be unapologetic about their identity, history, and giftedness. The book also features gorgeous and eye-popping illustrations done by Bonnie Lemaire. As a bonus, the book includes 100 affirmations young boys can repeat with their parents and teachers to reinforce self-esteem and confidence. Amanda wrote the book as not only being a love letter to her son Amani, but to many other black and brown boys around the world. She also wanted to be a part of the change to diversify children's book literature, which is really, really cool. This is Davon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Davon Miller's book buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
Okay, well, that is so wonderful. Davon Miller is a very talented young man, and I predict that he is going to one day be one of those global best-selling authors. And so I'm looking forward to that. And of course, he's got a wonderful voice. So I think also he's probably working on some Audible versions of his books. Again, his books are Mr. Tickety Talk Clock. There's a wonderful series, and you can order his books, and you can also order this wonderful Black Boy Fly on Amazon. And if you don't have children in your life, just order these books and send them to a local children's hospital or to St. Jude's, Shriners. There are lots of places where there are sick children who will really, really appreciate a gift of these books. So It's just something you can do. It's really, it takes only a minute, and you will feel so good knowing that you have brought some joy into the life of a child who is in the hospital, and they need books, and it is wonderful if they have this wonderful diversion from whatever they're going through, because one of the reasons that Devon Miller became an author is that he spent a great deal of his childhood in the hospital. He knows what it feels like to be, you know, there and to just have sometimes all the treatments that are going on, and you need something to think about, something to enjoy. And so he started writing stories when he was in the hospital. And now you can just make that little effort and order a book, and you can send it, you know, with your name, or you can have it dedicated to somebody and just send it to a local hospital or one of the big famous hospitals around the country. They're all over the place. And unfortunately, we have children, sick children all over the world. So send these books. And then while I was thinking about that, I was thinking about Amazon, and I was thinking about, yesterday I had, Tuesday I had a guest, Mark Graney, and it was really a joy to talk to him because as I was reading his book, I kept realizing as I'm reading, wow, this is just such great writing. And so it was fun when I talked to him, and he mentioned, and I know I received several emails from you, listeners who said, well, it was nice to hear that he started writing when he was 20, but he didn't get published until he was 42. So it means he didn't give up. And that's exactly what I'm telling you. You know, you don't know how long it's going to take you. And sometimes, as he said, he was writing and trying and, going through a lot of things in those years. But sometimes it just takes that moment when you say, I'm going to do it. I'm going to finish my book. And for those of you who have started or have just, you've perhaps participated in a NaNoWriMo and you wrote a book in a month, did you finish that book? Did you go back and work on it and get it in shape and try to get it published, try to find an agent? All of these things, as you look at your life, you say, whoa, as a writer, there are so many possibilities for me. And that's why I've always said, you know, that writing and of course reading, for me, I never expected to be working with writers as I have done this past 6 years. It's just been absolutely amazing that I celebrated the 6th anniversary of Joy on Paper. And I want to mention one writer in particular. Carolyn Hart is just one of the nicest women I have ever met in my life. She is so delightful. She is a Mystery Writer of America Grandmaster in 2014. And she writes a series of books, several series, but one of her most famous series is Death on Demand, a series about that is set in a bookstore, which of course appealed to me the minute I read the first one. But why I love Carolyn is that when I started the program, she was a guest after like the second or third month that I was on. And one day I received this big box at my front door. It was so unexpected. I had not interviewed that many authors. I didn't know really anybody. And there was this big box, and she had sent me a box full of her books and also her CDs. At the time, everybody was using CDs. And she had autographed them all. She, just out of the goodness of her heart, saying, you know, she was happy that I was starting a radio program, and she sent me this enormous box of books, which I've, over the years, as I had various events, various writing, when I met with various writing groups, I would give as a door prize one of her autographed books. And that's what she wanted me to do. She said, share these books with your listeners and encourage them to write. And so that's what I've done. And it's been just an honor to know her and to get to just promote her books. And that's why I'd like to promote a book that's coming up. It's called Ghost Blows a Kiss. And it's going to be released July 6th. Now, Her birthday is in August. So I would like to ask all of you, as a birthday gift to Carolyn Hart, to pre-order this book. Because in her series, Death on Demand, one of the really important aspects of her stories is that she mentions various writers. She always has maybe a half dozen, sometimes a dozen authors that she mentions as authors of books in her, you know, fictional bookstore. And what is great about that is that for me and for many of the readers of Carolyn Hart books, we have discovered other authors because of that. I know Mike Resnick is an author that I discovered. I had never read Mike Resnick. And I read Carolyn Hart's book, and in her book, she talks about Mike Resnick. And I went and got Mike Resnick's book. I started reading them, fell in love with his writing, read all of his books. And, of course, then I eventually got him to be a guest on my program. And for many, many years, we talked and we chatted, usually in the middle of the night, because Mike started writing. His writing life was sort of started at 10 o'clock at night, and he wrote until 6 in the morning. And I remember the first time I invited him to be on the program, I said, you know, will you be on the program? And he said, sure. And I said, and it's at 11 o'clock. And he said, 11 o'clock in the morning? I'm sleeping. I said, what do you mean you're sleeping? And then he explained to me that he would write from 10 to about 6 in the morning, and then he'd have his breakfast, dinner, whatever, and boy, at 11 o'clock, he was sound asleep. But one, you know, when he was going to be on the program, he made that special effort, just drank a extra pot of coffee and stayed up and talked to me at 11 in the morning. Fortunately, he passed away, but his writing is just wonderful. One of the best, again, most of his writing was actually sci-fi, but she mentioned it in context to a short story that he wrote, a mystery story, and then after that, I got hooked on his writing. But I would love if you, all of you, would just go out and pre-order Ghost Blows a Kiss by Carolyn Hart. Because one of the things, I've mentioned this before, Amazon has an algorithm. And if an author gets pre-orders, they put you sort of at the top of the pile and promote your books even more. Recently, my guest, Rita Moreau, did a pre-sale of her book, and this has really helped her a lot. And so if you can, just order this book ahead of time here as a sort of a gift to one of the greatest authors of all time for cozy fiction, although she didn't like to call it cozy because she considered it just another form of wonderful writing. But I hope that you will just pre-order this book for her. It will be a wonderful, wonderful birthday gift to her to know that people are still listening, and looking for a really great story. And this one is one of her Bailey Ruth ghost novels. Really, as always, all of her writing is great. She was nominated for the Pulitzer Prize for one of her books, which is called Letter from Home. And if you are looking for a book, this is a standalone. Letter from Home is a standalone, and it's a really great book. So you might want to also have a look at that to see what does a Pulitzer Prize nominated book look like. And thinking about cozy mysteries, I want to talk a little bit about Barbara Hinsky was here not too long ago, and we have another book buzz, and this one was done by Rita Moreau, and this time it is about a book that Barbara wrote. It's really a great book, and she's going to be on again to talk about this book. The wonderful thing is that she is giving half of her proceeds to the Foundation for Blind Children. So we're going to play the book buzz that Rita Moreau did for Barbara Hinsky.
is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz. Today we were talking about a heartwarming book, Guiding Emily by author Barbara Hinsky, the acclaimed author of The Christmas Club, now a film on the Hallmark Channel. Here's the buzz. Emily Maine had it all, a high-powered career with a leading technology giant and a handsome fiancé bounding up the corporate ladder. Their island wedding and honeymoon were idyllic until a tragic accident causes her retinas to detach. Her well-ordered life is shattered, as are all treatments are unsuccessful. She slips into blindness. How will those around her cope with her tragedy? Can she rebuild her life in the most unwelcome new normal? Meanwhile, a black lab puppy named Garth fulfills his destiny to become that most esteemed of all creatures, a guide dog. Guiding Emily is a heartwarming tale of love, loss, and courage as Garth and Emily make their way to each other. Sometimes the perfect partner has four paws. Readers should know that Guiding Emily was conceived during a tour of the Foundation for Blind Children by the author. Barbara Hinsky was inspired and moved by their mission and is donating half of her proceeds from Guiding Emily to the foundation. Barbara, you should know, is the best-selling author of the beloved Rosemont series and has now published mystery, thriller, and suspense novels in her Who's There collection. Now that her novel, The Christmas Club, has been made into a Hallmark Channel movie, she is completely starstruck and thrilled to have her work on the screen. Amazon and BookBub best-selling author Barbara Hinsky does not disappoint. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joy on paper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
Okay, let's go to commercials and then we'll be right back with Larry Jorgensen.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my very special guest today, Larry Jorgensen, because I love this book. I love, and well, of course, I love Coca-Cola. So I'm so happy to welcome Larry back to talk about Return to the Coca-Cola Trail, More People and Places in the History of Coca-Cola. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Patsy. Glad to be back with you and talk about our new book about people and places in the history of Coca-Cola. And you know, there's a lot of history and right in your area in Florida and nearby states. So we've got a lot we could talk about.
Okay. Well, that's great because, as I said, I was so happy to get this nice autographed book from you because I love Coca-Cola. And what I love about your books is that I think all writers should have your books just there on their shelf because they never know, you know, they're writing about a location. And it is always so much fun to add some depth to it, to be able to mention something real. And, of course, there are Coca-Cola factories all over the country. And this is so exciting how you decided to do these books.
Well, it started out as simply an idea to do a travel feature, and it got out of control because I realized, like you just said, that Coca-Cola is all over the country in varying stages of either it used to be a plant or it is still a plant or the community has some dedication because of things that Coca-Cola did there, the outstanding murals and so forth. You know, I found, I think in the first book, we talked about Valdosta, Georgia, and how that was the second place in the country where Coca-Cola was bottled. Well, we found in the second book another nearby place in Georgia, in Tifton, Georgia, where the Coca-Cola logo actually was changed. You know, we all look at that logo, Coca-Cola, in that script form and say, that's been there forever. Well, it's an interesting story how a sign painter who later became an internationally famous wildlife artist from Minnesota started out painting Coca-Cola signs, signs of trucks, signs of buildings, whatever. And he had the job of going to Tifton, Georgia, to paint a sign for Coca-Cola bottler on a ballpark wall, you know, the outfield wall. Well, he got there, and he had painted Coca-Cola logo so many times, he could actually do it backwards and upside down. That was sort of his trick, you know. But he told the bottler, he said, you know, the logo needs a little help, and it needs a little more depth, and I can make it better. So the bottler said, well, go ahead, paint it on the wall that way. Let's see what it looks like. So he went out and painted on this ballpark wall the Coca-Cola sign with his version, slightly changed, of the Coca-Cola logo. The local bottler was very impressed to the point where he called Coca-Cola Corporate in Georgia and said, come take a look at this. So they went to the ballpark. They looked at the sign. And 2 days later, they reappeared again, these two shirts and ties guys from Atlanta, and offered this little sign painter a rather healthy check and a contract if they could use and own that logo from there on out. So it was changed in Georgia slightly, just enough that Coca-Cola was very impressed with it. A neat area story for you. And there's a lot of that in Florida. You've got the Florida Panhandle, which is loaded with Coca-Cola history. And I need to mention, in my travels, I was in the Panhandle, and I was at Fort Walton Beach and came across a store called the Buccaneer Gift Store that has Coca-Cola memorabilia. I mean, it's stacked. You could go in there, and whatever you want to see in the way of Coca-Cola history is there, and it's available. Interesting place. It's called the Buccaneer. No, I don't work for them, so I'm not bidding paid for this. But I was just amazed at the store and that they do have a very large Coca-Cola bottle. It must be 12 feet high outside the store, where you can get your picture taken. So a lot of history in your area. Maybe you've heard of Quincy, Florida, which at one time was known as the City of Coca-Cola Millionaire. And we have a story about that in our second book, which tells how it happened, how all these businessmen in Quincy, Florida became Coca-Cola millionaires because they bought stock, and why they bought stock. And that's an interesting attraction right in your area as well.
Well, all of the stories are interesting from the point of view, as a anyone who wants to be a writer, you can pick up when you know, all these stories about the different families that bought Coca-Cola franchises. They are in themselves really American history in a bottle. You could write a story around probably every one of these families, because they are fascinating. They are people who were looking for ways to sort of make money and to enjoy the great, you know, and wonderful benefits of living in the United States. And it's just inspirational, really, the stories of the families that purchased the Coca-Cola franchises.
Well, and you know, there are still, even today, as I do work on Coca-Cola stories, and I'm thinking about possibly a third book, I talk to these families. We're in the fifth generations, a lot of times, that are still involved in Coca-Cola bottling. They believe so much in the product. They've invested their time and money and effort, you know, over the years to create a wonderful existence for their family, and at the same time, to create some amazing history. It was these families, and it was the historical associations and museums and so forth throughout the country that were a big help in putting this together. You notice in the book, there are a lot, in both books, in fact, there are a lot of old photos. And a lot of those came from families. Others came from historical associations. And they're amazing when you look at them and you see how they got started. I mean, the bottler up in Valdosta, I think I've got a picture in there of him actually delivering Coca-Cola in a wheelbarrow. So, yeah, I mean, it's great stuff that you can learn about and really appreciate the effort that went into this. In the first book, the foreword to the book was written by a gentleman who, his family has been in Coca-Cola bottling. He is the fifth generation, and he, in fact, is the great-great-grandson of the first person to ever bottle Coca-Cola, and that was Joe Biedenhorn in Vicksburg, Mississippi. And it shows you, I mean, there he's still, family's still bottling Coca-Cola and continuing with the legend.
Well, you know, as I said, I love both books. It's fascinating. Why don't you explain, why is the bottle green?
Okay, the bottle, that's the lead to my second book.
Yeah.
The bottle is green. The bottle, the iconic Coca-Cola bottle was created by a company in Calhoun, Indiana, the Root Glass Company. They won a competition to create that bottle. Well, it so happened that they had a sand quarry about 50 miles from Terre Haute where they were getting the sand to make the glass. It happened that in that sand there was copper and some other elements that actually created that slight green tint to the glass that they produced. Coca-Cola was so happy with that when they saw that. They named it Georgia Green. And years later, as other glass companies were licensed to make the Coca-Cola bottle, they were required by Coca-Cola, if they did not have those minerals in their sand, to add them, because they wanted that green to be in all the Coca-Cola bottles. So it happened by the circumstance, and it became a tradition to have a light green Coca-Cola bottle.
Well, it is so distinctive, and I mentioned in the earlier half hour at the beginning of the program that I traveled all over the world, and I know that when I was in Turkey, the bottles were green.
They are, and when you talk about traveling the world, I have done radio interviews in Dubai, and I've done a couple in England, and it's people that have found out because they have Coca-Cola, they like it, it's in their area, and they found out about the book, and the next thing you know, I'm talking to somebody in Dubai who drinks Coca-Cola.
Well, they drink it everywhere. I'm telling you, there's not a place that I've ever traveled to that they don't have, and I'm talking way places in the middle of nowhere, and they have Coca-Cola. It's just, it is the drink that everybody knows, and also always in. I know that I lived in Iran, and it was a very you would bring it to parties because people would just love to have Coca-Cola. It was better than a bottle of wine.
Well, you know, the Coca-Cola Corporation during the Second World War said, you know, our boys are going to have Coca-Cola when they're over there fighting. And Coca-Cola actually established small bottling plants in Europe to make sure that the soldiers would have Coca-Cola when they were over there fighting. Obviously, for Coca-Cola, they made a lot of friends when they came back to the United States. They were looking for Coca-Cola. Smart marketing all the way, you know, from day one, the bottlers and the corporations had a good product, and they knew how to promote it. You know, you've got Coca-Cola has created the Santa Claus we know. You know, the image of Santa was created by the Coca-Cola artist. Coca-Cola saved Charlie Brown Christmas. Nobody wanted to sponsor it. Coca-Cola came along and said, we think that's a great, great Christmas story. Let's make it a tradition. And Coca-Cola saved Charlie Brown and his Christmas tree. I'm sure at Christmas time, in your city, you'll see the huge Coca-Cola trucks that are all lighted up with Christmas decorations, and that all is the result of a TV commercial that was created in the 90s that actually was created just visually. They were not actual trucks, and the commercial was so popular that it's started another Coca-Cola tradition where now at Christmas time the big Coca-Cola trucks come to your town to help celebrate Christmas. So they've been on top of things as it goes along.
And of course all the Coca-Cola franchisers, they have been very important in their communities, and many times the Coca-Cola factory was the biggest thing in town, and they have been always at the lead in community service and doing good for their areas.
Well, and how many people you talk to that'll say, gee, I remember when I was a child, I would stand by the big window and watch the bottles go around as they filled them. Well, most of the time, if that child has his phone close to the window, you can bet somebody from inside would grab one of those bottles and take it out to him so he could get a free bottle of Coca-Cola. It's just, there's so many memories. What other brand can you think of where communities will raise money, have fundraisers to save and restore a Coca-Cola advertising sign painted on the side of a building? They're part of the community's memories. They're part of the history. And the communities want to save that. It's that thing, you know, when you look at a logo, when you look at something, you have a memory and you say, boy, that was great. And you want to save that memory.
That's true. I know that people go really whole hog into donating money to save various signs across the country. I know I've been to Albion, Michigan, and there they have a beautiful mural on a wall that I know that they preserved.
It's in my second book, and you'll notice that mural is on the side of a building that overhangs the Kalamazoo River.
Yeah.
So it became quite a challenge to restore that sign, and they had to spend a lot of money to get people in, not only to restore, but to figure out what would be needed to make it permanent. They had to go, you know, behind the sign. What was the structure there? And there was a lot of money spent to recreate that sign. We've got a good picture of it in the book, and I've been told that in September, this event was delayed because everything's been delayed. There will be this September a big celebration in the community to celebrate the restoration of that sign. It's a dandy. We talk about it in the book, and it's fascinating history to it.
Well, I love the stories here that you have about the artist, and you have an example there of him doing the logo upside down. It's so cute. Really, there are so many delightful things in this book, and as somebody who's, I actually did watch from outside a window in Highland Park, Michigan, when they had the bottling factory there, and we used to go there. And you're right, they did bring you bottles. Now, what was it, the last returnable bottle? What was that story about?
Well, what happened, you know, back about the 60s, Coca-Cola realized that we are now in a disposable environment. Nobody wanted to bring anything back to the stores anymore. And they advised their bottlers, you better get ready for disposable bottles and for canning. And the canning of Coca-Cola became a real challenge for many bottlers, because these were small bottlers, and to set up a canning line was expensive. So a lot of times, the bottlers would get together and they would create a cooperative canning company that would can Coca-Cola for all of them. Now, as far as the bottles, little by little, as the need for non-returnables came into every community, the bottle manufacturers started to make a non-returnable bottle. Well, what's the difference? The difference is the bottle is intended for one use. It's not, you know, it's not built so that you can reuse it and, you know, take a lot of abuse in the washing and sterilizing and recycling and so forth. The bottles became less expensive to produce, and consequently the bottlers could buy the bottle and know that it was going to get tossed, not brought back for deposit. It's just, that's the way we became as a society. We didn't want the hassle of taking empty bottles back. And, you know, so then what happened from there, now we've got the society that's into recycling. So the bottles many times are saved and go into a recycling plan, but it's usually a community effort versus an effort of the bottler.
Yes, I know, and I do love, I still love the bottle. Every once in a while, especially if I'm going to have a pizza, I just enjoy having the bottle. I still buy Coke in a bottle. The small one that you just hold in your hand, it just feels so good, and somehow it makes a pizza taste better when you have that bottle of Coke in your hand.
I've talked to so many people that say their first Coke was that 6-ounce bottle, and to this day, that's what they want. That they go to the store, and that's what they buy. I don't know if I told you the first time we talked about the $150,000 bottle.
No.
We talked about the Root Glass Company winning the competition. There were six companies that were competing to create the iconic bottle. The Root Company did, in fact, win that competition. They had created for the competition six bottles, and this was in 1905, and the bottles were dated 1905. Well, after they won the competition, Coca-Cola Corporation said, we want one of those bottles for the archives. The rest of them should be destroyed. Well, as fate would have it, one of them escaped, I guess you could say, and it was not destroyed. It showed up in a collector's assortment many years later, and ultimately it ended up in California about 2 years ago at an auction, and it went for $150,000. The reason we know that that was one of the six bottles, it's dated 1905 on the glass, on the bottom of the bottle. Those bottles were actually not put into production until 1906. So there were only six made that said 1905. Only two of them survived. One is in Atlanta in the archives, and one is held somewhere in California by a collector who had a lot of money.
And very lucky to find that. Wow, this is wonderful. This is a story that I think is that you've really come out with, sharing all of this knowledge that you've accumulated, and you've had fun doing it, right?
I have had fun. I have met people that have become friends. You know, you have right there in Florida the Root Museum over in Daytona Beach. It's actually part of the Museum of Science and Industry, I think they call it. But there's a complete wing on that museum that is dedicated to the Root family. And one of the great grandsons of the original Chapman Root is Preston Root, who lives just outside of Daytona and has just, I understand, released a book about the Root family, not only the bottling, but also they were very active next month in May. They were very active in the Indianapolis 500 automobile race for many years. And I received a note from Preston the other day that he has a book that's about to be out. It'll probably be in your area, and it's going to tell the history of a Coca-Cola bottler who went racing at Indianapolis. And Preston Root himself is an amazing man. He has a lot of Coca-Cola history, and he has a lot of automotive racing history. And he's right there in your state, just outside of Daytona Beach.
Well, I'll have to have him on the program, too, because I never get tired of talking about Coca-Cola. And Larry Jorgensen, do you have a website you want people to go to?
We sure do, and that's the best place to get the book if you can't find it in a local country store or museum. By the way, that museum in Daytona Beach does have a book. But go to our website. It's simply thecocacolatrail.com. Now, if you go there, then I know who you are. I'll actually autograph one to you personally if you want me to, and make sure it goes to you. The ones in the store obviously will not be autographed personally, but I've tried to sign as many as I can. You're not that far from Daytona Beach. Get over there and look at the Root display. There's a lot of Coca-Cola there, and obviously pick up our book while you're there.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Larry, for being on the program today. It's always a joy to talk to you, and I will continue to promote your book, especially when I do events. I hope I will be doing events again where I meet writers, because I think this is a perfect book. Give them ideas on stories they can write and places that they can include in their books. And everybody, when you can start traveling around America, and more people are getting RVs and they're starting to travel around America since they can't make trips overseas very easily, pick this book up. It's a travel guide. You can go all over America and always find a Coca-Cola place for you, whether it's a sign, whether it's a factory, or whether it's just a local museum that is honoring the Coca-Cola era. And please get this book. It's called The Coke Return to the Coca-Cola Trail, More People and Places in the History of Coca-Cola. And it's by Larry Jorgensen, and it's thecocacolatrail.com. Larry, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you, Patsy. We'll enjoy it again, and let's stay in touch.
Okay, we will. Okay, everybody, have a Coke today, and think about Larry Jorgensen. Thank you so much, Larry. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Okay, see, this is what I'm always telling all of you people. It could, your books, you know, you can write a book about anything. Anything that sort of interests you, whatever it is. If you have, I don't know, if you like, tools. If you write a book about tools. If you like combustion engines, write a book about combustion engines. You know, there are so many things, I'm wondering if, yeah, perhaps a Dunkin' Donuts book, and then you have to visit every Dunkin' Donuts. I mean, pick something that intrigues you, something that makes your life interesting, and you can keep going for years and years just doing the research and then coming out with a book and just having fun while you're doing it, because that's the name of the game. Joy on paper, and whether you are a reader or a writer. And again, I would like to ask all of you, please, if you could, there are the two books that I recommend that you buy in addition to this one is Guiding Emily by Barbara Hinsky, because she's giving half of her proceeds to the Foundation for Blind Children. And that is a wonderful, wonderful thing that she's doing, and she's a great writer, and you will very much enjoy the book. She's a thoughtful writer, and you will love it. And then, of course, Carolyn Hart's book, Ghost Blows a Kiss. Pre-order that now, and it will be a wonderful birthday gift for one of America's great, great writers, and 2014 Mystery Writer of America Grandmaster. Speaking of Grandmasters, let me see. I think, Larry Block, Lawrence Block, Mystery Writer of America Grandmaster, is going to be on the program in June, because, again, he knows the joy of writing, and he's been writing for 50 years or 60 years or whatever years, and he's going to be on in June for just in time for his birthday. So this is the wonderful thing about it. Carolyn's going to be 85 in August, and she's still writing. And writing is one of those wonderful things that you can do, and you can keep going on and on. And the last time I talked to Mary Higgins Clark, she was 89 years old. And, of course, it's just Eugenia Lovett West celebrated her 97th birthday here on Joy on Paper. Because what did she do? She found what I'm always telling you about. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing, like Carol J. Perry, who's writing. She's like a little writing machine, and she's going to be a guest here in May, because I hope she will have a series on the Hallmark Channel. But you're not going to get it unless you have a lot of books, and I'm telling you, Rita Moreau, you better be writing there, because we need to get you up to up to 12 books, too. Okay, everybody, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Ed, thank you so much. Okay, he saluted me. I saluted him. Boom! Because I should have been a general. I'd have been such a great general. It would be nice, too, because a general gets a big pension. I would like that, too. And then you get on boards, and you become a board of director on this and this and this. I should have been a general. What happened to me? Why did I become a general? Everybody, have a great weekend. Bye-bye now.